Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, Cars of the Year, and Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome to Sports Day. Nice to have your company. Not exactly sure what's going on, but normally we have a little intro to get us going here on the radio. Mark Reddings, good evening to you.
Good evening, Carl, and to our listeners. Rain starting to fall on this Monday night. It was a pretty hot game on Saturday night, the Derby, RAC Derby 55, and the West Coast Eagles and the Fremantle Dockers. Well, it was great to watch a bit of physicality, a bit of spite, a bit of fire, Carl, but at the end of the day, it's cost them a fair bit of pocket money. Their player fund might be, player trip fund might be diminished somewhat after what we saw at the weekend. But it was actually a competitive, a spirited game of footy, which surprised a few.
Well, it depends if the $14,500 that the players were fined actually goes into the players' trip fund scheme, because that's what used to happen to the old fines going back in the day. If blokes were late for training, you know, you get fined $1,000. I mean, these are the things that go on behind the scenes that people don't necessarily find out about, but those sorts of little deals that clubs have behind the scenes, and those little fracas and things that might occur behind the scenes, always goes towards the players' trip fund. What else you got?
I've got to say, the hot topic, thanks to Dardanup Butchering Company, Taste Dardanup Valley Spring Lamb, has to be at the Essendon Football Club. And this morning I'm getting texts saying he's gone, Rutten's fired, he's sacked. And I checked around, I looked for some confirmation on social media, on websites, nothing, not one ounce of evidence. Of course, Essendon did have a board meeting, an emergency board meeting today. Of course, Essendon President Paul Brasher has decided to stand down off the back of those meetings. And David Barham, who has had a long history as a media executive, is the incoming president. But Ben Rutten, according to all at the Bombers at the moment, is still coach. But surely that can only be short-term by the sounds, by the mutterings coming out of the hangar over there at Windy Hill, or the old Bombers headquarters.
Yeah, I just wonder whether they now regret getting rid of John Worsfold when they made that change, because the club was clearly going through a transitional phase there with regrowing a new group of players coming through. John had gone through the storm that had to be weathered there at Essendon. And seriously, since Kevin Sheedy, they haven't had a lot go right, have they? I mean, of course, the supplements saga, which they had under the leadership of James Hurd. I don't think the Essendon Football Club fans have probably forgiven them for what unfolded there, or maybe they have. But I'd love to hear from any Essendon fans. There's a very strong contingent of them out west, and how are they feeling? Do you want to see the back of Ben Rutten? Story tonight is the Bombers meet with interested Clarkson after coup leaving Rutten's job untenable. Now, we've seen the president go tonight, and there has certainly been some discussion around the board, and the CEO has confirmed that the coach still has the job at the moment. But already we know that GWS are in the hunt. Not likely that Clarkson is going to go there. His desire, I think, is to stay in Victoria, which means that that rules the GWS Giants offer out. But you've got to have suitors. It's like selling your house, Skeet. If you've got a few people in the fight, then your price goes northwards. Now, North Melbourne have basically put all their eggs in one basket, because they openly have admitted that they want to get Alistair Clarkson, and they've got that $1.4 million carrot dangling in front of him right now.
Yeah, he's a former kangaroo. Maybe there was the romance of that. But if Essendon comes late with an offer, I suspect they'll be front runners to get Alistair Clarkson across the line. Just a quick question, though. Yeah. And look, Clarkson's record is outstanding, but the hype and the hysteria about him is justified. I mean, the last few years at Hawthorn were not great, to be honest with you. He is a premiership-winning coach and a very good one. Let's not mask that by any means. He's an outstanding coach. But we have seen coaches get opportunities, no more recently than this year at Collingwood with Craig McRae, unheralded. You wouldn't have picked him as the coach of Collingwood. I wouldn't have picked him just on reputation. Obviously, as an assistant coach, he's got some a track record behind him. But this fascination with Clarko, it's pretty big. It's pretty strong.
Yeah, I think that, though, if you have a look at the long-time coaches, and I think that right now we can talk of McRae as being the coach of the year, but you'd have to include Chris Scott in the argument. What he's been able to do at Geelong, they're a couple of games clear, they're the kings of the crop this year, they can't get beaten, they win the minor premiership. I wouldn't have had him winning the minor premiership at the start of the season.
No, but that being said, I think yeah, 100% right. Chris Scott's done an amazing job, but the question mark about Geelong in the last half a dozen years has been about what happens in the next 6 weeks? Because we know they can get to this part of the year, but have they found the secret, that recipe to success, Carl, to not just get to a prelim final, not fall over at the critical stage of the season? I get the feeling they've got it worked out at the moment.
Well, I wrote in the Sunday Times around what has happened for a while down at Geelong, and I don't think that there has been a coach that has rested more players throughout the season than Chris Scott has at Geelong. Now, yes, he has an ageing group of players, but he has regularly been resting a lot of those elder statesmen. Every 3 or 4 weeks, Joel Selwood has been having a spell. He was back in the team this week, but it was last week that he had his rest. Patrick Dangerfield, Stanley was going to have a rest, and then Segler got concussed, so he had to come back into the side. On the weekend, it was Mitch Duncan, Isaac Smith and Mark O'Connor who had their rest. This week, we know that there's some big news around a key forward.
Yeah, Jeremy Cameron is going to be out with a hamstring injury. It's the same leg that he sustained some other hamstring issues with previously, so he won't play again until the qualifying final. Reece Stanley's got an issue which will keep him sidelined as well. I know you're a proponent, you think that Geelong will rest a lot of players this weekend. I don't think that's the case. I think if they play this weekend, have a week off. If they don't rest a lot of players this week, they've got a qualifying final. They win that, they're into a preliminary final. They'll be playing, what, one game in about 4 weeks. I'm not sure that's enough. I know the ageing list would maybe lend you to think that's the case, but I think Scott will put together the best possible list he's got. If they're all fit, they'll play this weekend.
Yeah, if they're all fit. But players at this time of the season aren't all fit from just a niggle perspective. Whilst they probably don't have injuries to force them out for a week, and until now they've had to fight for their spot, which has been, you know, the intriguing part about the competition. The great part about this weekend is top four still up for grabs, and we've got sides like Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Collingwood and Fremantle who are all fighting for a double chance. So there's no chance of those teams resting players that they need to get a key result over the line. But Geelong have that luxury. So I think without doubt, that Chris Scott will be prepared to leave out.
Like Ross Lyon did.
Particularly against West Coast.
Like Ross Lyon did. You know what?
I think, and this is the reason why it was brought in the first place, but I think without doubt, where they're positioned right now, it means nothing this weekend. They're playing Gold Coast, playing West Coast.
But my point is, Carl, and look, I understand what you're saying, but I believe that having, and going back to 1990 very briefly, Essendon, Collingwood, West Coast, the draw, Collingwood and West Coast, the draw. Essendon played, I think, 2 games in about 4 or 5 weeks. It wasn't to their benefit. That's why I'm saying, look, I agree with you. There's no point taking any risk with players, but if they can get a good 80% out of their best players this week, then I would take that, have the week off, because you know what? You can get injured any time.
You can. There's no doubt about that, but I reckon he'll be erring on the side of the caution. That's what I'm predicting. Now, Carlton, Bulldogs and Kilda fight for the last final spot in the eight. Hawks play the Western Bulldogs. St Kilda play Sydney and Carlton play Collingwood. Of course, Collingwood will be desperately trying to win to get themselves a double chance finishing inside that top four. Who makes the final spot?
I'm tipping Brisbane. It's only Monday. What are we giving out?
Carlton, Bulldogs and Kilda.
I'm trying to think Brisbane will beat
Brisbane
Melbourne.
Brisbane are playing Melbourne. Yeah, no, forget about that end of the table. Yeah. They're just the Carlton, Bulldogs and Kilda.
So Carlton...
Carlton play Collingwood, St Kilda play Sydney and Hawthorn play the Western Bulldogs.
I'm putting a line through St Kilda. They can't beat Sydney. They're just not up to it. Sydney's flying.
They had a kick straight in the weekend. They would have been up to it.
Brisbane's... Trust me.
And Brisbane's going as well as Sydney, aren't
they? No, they're not.
No,
I think Sydney's going as well as anyone bar Geelong at the moment. So we've got...
Really?
You don't think so?
Not really. No, but anyway, not really. It's your opinion.
They are second.
Now, you have your opinion. I'm allowed to have mine.
So who's going better than Sydney, apart from Geelong? Go on, give it to me.
Collingwood.
Well, clearly not, because they've beat him by 5 goals, you numpty.
Yeah, I know, but this is the thing, right? If you actually have a look at the sides that are fighting around the top of the table, well, they'd won 11 in a row weekend.
That's very good form, but as I say, who do I think will make it? Mm. Oh, gee. Look, the Bulldogs play Hawthorn and Launceston, and they haven't won down there for a long time. Possibly.
It doesn't matter, does it?
No, it doesn't. But
it does
because you know what? The Dockers most likely will play, very good chance they'll play the Bulldogs or Carlton in an elimination final. So there is a great deal of interest on that front anyway. Rod's in Dianella, is waiting patiently, 133882, to talk about Alistair Clarkson.
Yes, Mark, I reckon you're right on the mark. Now, Clarko, you know, I'm a big Hawthorn man from years under when we won our premierships under Clarko. I mean, he had the cattle. We had the cattle at Hawthorn. You know, Rioli and Hodge and Mitchell, you know, and Gibbo. He'll go to Essendon because they've got cattle. North Melbourne haven't got that cattle.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that that you make a very good point. And is there the excitement of building a list? You're certainly seeing Davies Uniacke and players like that starting to bear some fruit. There's no doubt about that. I think Curtis Taylor's a bright spark that they've got there. Taylor down back looks okay. And a few of their other young players are getting more of a regular berth, like Bailey Scott and so on. But they are certainly a little bit behind where Essendon are at right now, Rod. And they've invested, Rod, so much in players from outside their football club. Blokes like Caldwell and Scheel and 2 Metre Peter, for example, just Jake Stringer, these players that they've got to their footy club, which is, I think, one of the major reasons why the Essendon faithful are so unhappy with what they've done so far. We need to get to a break because Adam Simpson's going to join us after this. Thanks to Polaris, Polaris Australia's number one selling side-by-side brand. If you've got something that is hot on your mind, if you are a Bombers fan, we'd love to hear from you. Thanks to the Dardanup Butchering Company's Taste of the Dardanup Valley Spring Lamb. I'd like to ask Simo what he's going to do with Nick Nat this week. We'll find out after this. It's 18 after 6.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, Cars of the Year, and Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Nice to have your company, and it's fantastic to have the West Coast Eagles coach joining us here for Dig Deep on Sports Day with Digger West, Adam Simpson, the coach. Welcome, Simo. How are you, mate?
Hey, boys. Yeah, going okay.
Didn't get the job done, but certainly a really good effort, particularly early. Took it right up to the Freo Dockers, and, gee, I'll tell you what, they had to work pretty hard to get away with a win.
Yeah, we made them earn it. Obviously, they were too good for us on the night. And, you know, to be honest, we're missing a few soldiers. So I actually think since the bye, we've brought effort. We just haven't got the result, which is really disappointing. But I was pretty happy that the guys at least fronted with the right attitude, and there's some positives we can take from these games, albeit we haven't been winning.
Adam, your players ruffled some feathers in the Fremantle camp. Obviously, the melee is going to cost some dollars, but was that a preconceived plan just to get out there and be more physical than you have been previously?
No, not really. I think the physicality of where we need to take our game needs to look a bit more like that. Not to say that you bust out 20 grand every time you play. But I think the fact that it was a derby made it pretty easy to get the boys up. But no, we've been trying to play a bit more of a pressure game, contest-based, field position, and that comes with some physicality. So I think, you know, when we get Brayshaw tagged by Nelson, that sort of brings a bit of spot in a few things as well. And, you know, one thing led to another. But no, definitely not the plan to start a melee, but it was a plan to be physical.
Absolutely. And look, some of the players that I guess there have been question marks from, if not inside the football club, then out, I thought showed a bit. Xavier O'Neill, has he played a better game at AFL level? I thought he was terrific.
Yeah, he played 20 games of AFL, 25, but, you know, he's had a pretty good look at it the last few weeks, and it's probably where the game's going. It's pretty contest-based and what we're trying to do, and it sort of suits what his profile gives us, and he's got that power and speed as well to get from contest to contest. So, yeah, really pleased he's put together a little block of football that gives us a glimpse of what might be in the future, because, he wants to play as good as he can. I think he took a good step forward on the weekend.
Simo, how do you respond to the back page of our West? And I know, look, this is a snippet that they've taken out of the Herald Sun's annual AFL Rich List, which has revealed, it says, as just 7 Eagles players eating up $6 million of the club's $13 million salary cap.
Well, it's just not true. I mean, I don't know what to say, Carl. I mean, it's a guess. Like, I suppose they'd ring managers and try and predict what other players might be on, but, you know, I know for a fact that it's hundreds of thousands of dollars difference in that article than what's reality. So then what do? You know, you write an article off another article when it's just not fact. So I don't know how to respond other than just to tell everyone it's not true.
So
you know what I mean? It's hard to actually give it any oxygen, albeit everyone takes it as gospel. There's not no public record that states what everyone's on, so it's purely speculation. And then to assume, you know, what they have is just not right.
So, Simo, have you got more of an issue, obviously, with the facts being on the board correctly, but also are you a fan of, say, the American style, where they're a bit more open with their salaries for professional athletes? Here, it's a bit more guarded, and obviously players aren't all that fussed about having their numbers put out publicly?
Yeah, I'll, two answers to that. One, no, I haven't got my nose out of joint with it all. It's just not true. So having to comment on something that's not quite relevant to reality, I suppose, can get frustrating. And the second piece, I'm not too fussed about the wages. I mean, if the Players Association were happy to do it, then do it. If they're not, don't. You know, it's probably over to the players if they want that revealed. So, yeah, that's probably where I sit with that.
Does it cause any issues, given that it's not factually correct? Does it cause issues within, you know, the club with the other players, you think, when something is put out there like this?
No, I don't think so. I don't think everyone's sitting around comparing their wage, but at the same time, I don't think they're worrying about it too much. I think we want as many good players as we can, and, you know, obviously those players that were spoken about are our best. So, but yeah, the conversations, I can't see or hear of our boys doing any of that stuff.
You've begun the campaign, Adam, for Tommy Barras to be an All-Australian. is that
built? How am I going?
I don't know. I think it's an interesting conversation, in all honesty. Given where you are on the ladder, does that make it tougher? His form's been outstanding. But it's a valid argument. But in all honesty, where do you think you sit with it?
Oh, I think I've got no pull whatsoever, other than I'm pretty biased. you can look at it the other way. He's had to deal with that many inside 50s.
Correct.
For him to do what he's done, probably is a bit easier if you're in a team that's... you know, averaging 44 against, not 64. So that probably makes it even harder for him. So, look, I just think it's worth acknowledging how good a season he's having. He's in career best form, and you know, whilst we're not winning, I think he's having a great year as a fullback, and all credit to him.
Shannon Hearn playing some super footy as well. Is it a fait accompli that he goes on? He just looks like he has another year left in him. Do you feel the same way?
It looks that way, yeah. I can't see why not, but I haven't... Like, we've both said, oh, let's just wait till the end of the year. It's only a week away, boys, so I reckon early next week we'll have a pretty clear indication, but all things are pointing in the right direction. And, yeah, I'm sure if he's had enough of the game or he can't be bothered doing another pre-season, he'll come and tell us, but his form probably warrants, you know, that conversation to be in his court.
What about this week to Geelong, mate? Clearly, Nick Nat struggled on Saturday night, and obviously it's a long way down there to Geelong. Do you take one of the young boys and give them another crack? I mean, where do you sit on this last game, given where Geelong are right now?
Yeah, someone told me we're paying 17 to 1 this week. I'm not sure if I've seen that in a two-horse race. So, yeah, look, I think with Nick, we'll just have to see how he pulls up tomorrow. We won't take any risk with him. He's clearly not 100%. And, you know, we've got a few players who are just hanging on and doing the right thing for the club, especially the last couple of weeks. And we'll make a call on Nick, and we won't take any risks if he doesn't need to. But he needs a good break, good pre-season, and hit the ground running next year. So at the moment, we'll weigh it up in a day or two's time.
When it comes to the forward line without Josh, obviously it's going to take a while to get some sort of synergy happening, but it's a situation where obviously Jack's playing some good footy now to try and find that next tool. I thought maybe Bailey Williams might have been a chance to come in there, Hugh Dixon. The search is on, and obviously Oscar waiting in the wings.
Yeah, I mean, Oscar Allen will solve that problem, you would have thought. That combination of Darling and Allen, then with a second ruck that can kick some goals, is probably the formula that most clubs go by. So you probably can't get too many more, you know, A-graders if you get those three spots filled. So, yeah, we've got a bit of work to do, and Oscar's missed a full season. And, oh, you should have seen him pre-season. He was ripping it apart. I thought, here we go. Mm. How am I going to fit JK in with these two? And then, of course, we've unfortunately haven't had the chance to get them all on the track together and on the park. So, yeah, hoping to get Aussie back next year fully fit. You know, he's great age profile for us. He's played 50-odd games and 23, 24. You hope that he can help fill the void that JK's going to leave, albeit you just can't replace. You can't replace players like that, not in the short term anyway.
No, but it'd be nice to have probably another 10 players that were all flying in February, up, ready, raring to go. So big pre-season ahead. Thanks very much for your time tonight.
Good on you, boys. Appreciate it.
Good on you. Adam Simpson there. Thanks for your company here on Sports Day. 133-882 is our number. That was for Digging Deep and what all great sports people do, just like the team at Digger West, your earth-moving attachment specialist. What's hot for you tonight? Thanks to the Dardanup Butchering Company's Valley Spring Lamb, available at WA's best restaurants, hotels and cafes. We'll get into your calls next. 133-882.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot, gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
What's hot for you? Thanks to the Dardanup Butchering Company, Taste of Dardanup Valley Spring Lamb, 133-882. Love to know if you do want to know what the players are on dollar-wise. What do you think about that? 133-882. And you wanted to know what?
Me?
Yeah.
What I'd to know.
You just were talking to me about something during the break that you wanted to ask the audience about tonight, but that's all right.
I've completely forgotten.
Yeah, we'll rekindle that spirit shortly. Kate in Claremont is going to chime in first. 133-882 if you'd like to go after Kate. Good evening, Kate.
Hi, how are you going?
Good.
Look, before I get on to the salary, I just wanted to say great call the other night, guys. That was the last sort of 5 to 10 minutes of that game, interspersing it with the Melbourne Carlton game. That was some of the most exciting calling of a footy game I've ever heard in my life. I loved it.
Well, we loved it too, Kate. And I've got to say, it was a bit of fun because Carl had his laptop up and I was looking at that game at the MCG. And I've got to say, Kate, I get told by my wife that I can't multitask. And I reckon I proved, at least looking at games of footy, that men can do that, Kate.
You did say that on the night, and Carl was busily trying to work out the ladder before the other game had even finished. It was really, really good value, guys. Loved it.
Thanks for your feedback, Kate.
No worries. Now, the salary. I don't know what you two earn. You don't know what I earn, and frankly, it's none of our business.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've always been an advocate for whoever gets what is their private business. And if you are able to negotiate a deal where you get paid $1.1 million, which is what they believe, and that is certainly the ones that have written the articles, that what Jeremy McGovern is on, well, so be it. But I don't think we really care that much about the salaries and what players earn, do we? I mean, it's something that I know gets highlighted when it comes to a few of the other international codes, and you spoke about it through the interview with Simo there, saying that, well, to end all this sort of speculation. But the unfortunate part is, Kate, if we don't know, then
and it's wrong.
If it's wrong, but if we don't know in the first place, then you're going to get continual articles like we've seen in the last couple of days.
But I just don't think it's any of our business. We don't know how much most people earn. Just because they're sports players, it doesn't really give us the right to know their income.
I think more to the point here, Kate, though, is that the speculation that there was six or seven players that are getting half the Eagles salary cap, I think that's the biggest story here, because it's investing in the future, which is going to be a massive issue for the West Coast Eagles, because a lot of those guys that have been written about in this article are a lot closer to the end. And if they are somewhere near that amount of money, it might not be correct, but if they're somewhere near that amount of money, then there is certainly going to be or have to be a massive shift to invest in the future in the not too distant future.
But surely, Carl, a lot of clubs in the AFL would have a handful, six, seven players that take up a large chunk of the salary cap. Melbourne, you think of some of the players that have re-signed there on big contracts. Surely it's not totally unusual that the West Coast Eagles, albeit their age demographic is older than some others, that is the case. I mean, Geelong, surely their big name players, the Camerons, the Hawkins, the Selwoods, the Dangerfields, are taking up primarily a large part of the salary. I'm wrong.
Yeah, and we can assume that, and be interesting to see if we actually put the microscope on each of those other clubs to see whether they're in a similar boat, and they may well be. But until we cast a microscope over the rest of the competition, it's something that really it's just purely speculation. Thanks, Kate. Thanks for your thoughts. I do agree with you, though. I really don't care what they earn. Good luck to whoever or whatever they can get. Pav is in Henley Brook. G'day, Pav.
G'day, Carl. How you going? How's your mate going? All right?
Skeet, yeah, no, he's good.
Good. Carl, you won't remember me, but I love your company. We were at a pub do about 10 years ago or more, and you threw me at George Grilicic because I speak Croatian or Slav.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave him a burst. It was an interesting interlude. And you threw me a pile of passes to the waffle, which was much appreciated, Carl.
Good on you, mate. And what, now, what do you want to raise tonight?
Right, I'll try and make it quick. Just bear with me a little. I've run this past, I think, a couple of hundred people. And look, I employ people. Now, if I got the productivity I get out of them that I got that we get out of Lob and Tab, and I don't want to pick on them. There's injuries, there's attitude, there's whatever. And you can't say that, you know, Tabner works hard in the gym because, you know, I'd rather have Favola at full forward. He gives me five goals. I don't care whether he gets drunk every day. Now, Walters, a great player, but could be on his last year, and I think he has to realise that. But looking at Fife, now, if he gets thrown in the midfield again, I think there's more busted shoulders and hamstrings for him. This is my view, and the view of a lot of people, is that I'd put him, well, we talk about it, put him on the opposition's best backman, because I've backed Fife to mark against most people, and if it hits the ground, he's still a dual Brownlow medalist. Now, going further, I was wrong on Mundy. I thought Mundy needed to be put up forward, and, you know, Mundy's Mundy. Now, Griffin Logue, centre-half forward for sure. He rucked well against Natanui, but Natanui's not fit, and why they play him, I don't know. Just rehab him for next year. What a marvellous player. Now, Griffin Logue at centre-half forward, muscle, grunt, attitude, plays a bit like you, Carl. Now, I'm resting Ruckman, and I don't understand it entirely in modern football, but I don't believe in resting him, you know, put him in the forward pocket. Now, you take Meek. You don't learn to mark at training or jumping at a ball suspended from a rope. You learn it on the field, and Ruckman learnt it in the forward pocket, a la the Gary Dempseys of the world, etc. Now, they missed their calling there because Meek should have been prepared for the finals, and they're going to regret that. Now, Tracy or Johnson, that Johnson, he's going to be a good footballer. And Tracy, you'd be inclined to play him as a defensive forward, so the defender takes him to the ball. He doesn't quite read the play well enough. Let's go to the coaching. The backs are coached 9 out of 10. The midfield, 6 out of 10. I still think they rely a lot on Brayshaw and, you know, players get tired. What a great play. But so is the Sarong. He's a beauty. And the list goes on. The forward line, the coach for the forward line, 3 out of 10. And I know who it is. Let's not get into personalities. But it's diabolical, Fremantle's forward line, diabolical. Week after week, the productive output. Look, I'll just say this. Lob and Tabner, they don't have to stop at border security because they got nothing to declare. No sweat, no perspiration, no bruises, and no stats. Now, I think I'll stop on that. I've made my point. The forward line is a real worry. They cannot win a flag with that forward. You cannot win games kicking 7 goals and expect to keep the opposition to 6. Now, that is a ridiculous... And Lyon murdered Freo for years. So quickly on the Eagles, look, they lack quality players and some of them aren't fit. I think that Corns is right about that. Their structure is poor. Their midfield never quite learned how to go into the defensive mould. They relied on a super back line. So I say they want a flag on individual ability, and I'd give the coaches, at a push, 5 out of 10. And they've got a long way to go.
Good on you, Pat.
Thank you for tolerating me.
Pleasure, Pat.
I'd like to call...
We love.
Thank you very much.
No worries. We love you short and sweet. So, I think that's what he said he was going to be at the start.
Can I say
I'll
this
be short and sweet.
There's a bit to unpack there. I'm not sure we can get to it between now and midnight. But
well, there's no doubt that Fremantle's forward line is still a massive work in progress. But and rewind the clock a week, Lobb was their best forward a week ago.
That's what I'm about to say. He potted Lobb, and then he also had a crack saying Michael Walters in his last year. Well, he did have 19 touches, kicked 2 goals against the Eagles. So the memory of some supporters or some watchers can be a little limited.
I think that there's, you know, because I like O'Driscoll and I don't mind Frederick and I don't mind Switkowski, and he's been out for a while too, and that was his first game back. So pressure is on with Pierce Schiltz and others for those small man spots. There's no doubt about that. Collier's out of the side. He was in that role, but now he's been forced out of the team. So there is competition there. I am, though, concerned around the key big man spots at Freo, and I think you need a couple of key big men to win and be genuine contender. I mean, they'd love to have Hipwood and Danaher, for example, running around in the Freo forward line. They'd love to have, you know, Brown and Jackson, say, running around in the Freo forward line. They don't. And right now, they might not have Lobb. They've had Tabanat, but he's been breaking down. He's become unreliable. Jai Amos has just played his first game back at Peel on the weekend, touched it 4 times, but kicked 2 straight. That's the one thing he can do is kick. Tracy is still a work in progress. I agree with that, and he's not the answer. And Griffin Logue is probably the best of a bunch of big, tall, key attacking players that is showing us some real effort at the moment.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Griffin Logue, though, is a natural forward. Competes really well, but not sure that's his one word. But thanks, Pav, for your call.
Rod in Ballajura. G'day, Rod.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
I was calling in regards to a post that I saw whilst entering IGA today. I didn't actually read the article on the West about the West Coast Eagles and the Dad's Army comment. I find that quite highly offensive, considering that the West Coast Eagles this year were missing practically nearly a third of their team for almost the entire year. Like, you take any team in the AFL, I don't care who you take, and you take the amount of outs that the West Coast Eagles had this year, I would love to see where they finish up, considering where we finished up. Yeah, I think it's highly offensive to say things like that.
Well, we did see it, Rodney, earlier this year, apart from the Eagles losing players through COVID, well, the Brisbane Lions, before the game against Essendon, they lost quite a few players through to COVID, and they were beaten by the Bombers up at the Gabba, and they had 9 out or thereabouts. So, yeah, it absolutely has made a difference to their start of the season. Look, let's be honest, they haven't had any luck in running, but by the same token, it's probably what's happened this year has fast-tracked what has to happen in the next year or two or three in terms of getting the list back to an area that's going to be challenging, contending, and being regarded as a danger to the top sides. At the moment, clearly not the case. And they have had a pretty poor record over the past year and a half of winning full stop. So, yeah, there's criticism, and I think it goes back to the discussion we were having, Carl, about salaries with the West Coast Eagles and with the AFL 100 top players in the competition and what they're getting paid. Oh, look, it's of interest, passing interest, but for me, you know, it doesn't really fascinate me day in, day out. And if it comes out as an article, then so be it. But Rodney thinks it's slightly demeaning to those at the West Coast Eagles.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the context that we need to take here, though, is you talk about the old players. Old players doesn't mean your football team's bad. And when you consider that, what, on the weekend, we didn't have Duncan and Isaac Smith. There's 2 30-plus-year-olds that play for Geelong. They did have Guthrie, who's 29 turning 30, Blixavs is 31, Dangerfield is 32, Cameron is 29 turning 30, Selwood 34, Menegola 30, Tui 32, Hawkins 34, and Rowan 31 all played on the weekend in GWS's side that pulverised one of the so-called up-and-coming, young, evolving teams in Gold Coast in the competition. Absolutely pulverised them. So old players can have impact. The unfortunate part is Gaff, interrupted season, Shuey, interrupted season, Nat Nui, interrupted season. We could go on about Yo, McGovern and all the other older guys. There's not too many of the Eagles players that haven't had something go wrong with them, where for the most part that group of players have been rested at Geelong when they've wanted to rest them, like Selwood and Duncan and the other guys that we've had rotate in and out of that Geelong team. So their management has been handled a lot better. Their fitness is something that is right on point at the moment, and that's why I said it'll be interesting to see what they do in the next couple of weeks. We've got to get to a break. 133-882 is the number. Join in. What's hot for you? Thanks to the Dardanut Butchering Company's Valley Spring Lamb, available at WA's best restaurants, hotels and cafes. And the big news, headlines, is that Essendon may well be on the search for a new coach. Not yet, but may well be. Just reading some reports that maybe some of the board have met with Alistair Clarkson behind the scenes. Thanks to Polaris. Thank you, Australia, for making Polaris's number one selling side-by-side brand 21 years in a row. Back soon.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Thanks for your company here on Sports Day. Stay with us after the break. Tony Knott, a legend of the WAFL. A significant milestone is going to be released at Swan Districts this week. And Daniel Garb to talk about the World Game. Terrible start there for Manchester United. Thanks to Kia, Australia's most wanted, the Kia EV6 and Kia Sportage.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day, and we do what we normally do here on a Monday after the 7 o'clock news, and that is get into a WAFL update for the Kia EV6 and Sportage, the cars of the year. And joining us from the Swan Districts Football Club is one of their legends, Tony Knott, here on Sports Day. Tone, welcome, mate. How you going?
Yeah, very good, mate. Yourself?
We're terrific, and obviously Swan Districts are still very much in the conversation to play finals this year. A big win over the West Coast Eagles, and your percentage received a pretty handy boost along the way on Saturday.
Yeah, it was nice to obviously get that win. Obviously, we know there's a fair bit of work to be done these next 3 weeks, so it's going to be pretty close. So, yeah, obviously the club's gearing up to tackle these next three games, obviously knowing that, you know, that top five spot is going to be pretty close.
Now, from a defensive point of view, couldn't have got much better against the West Coast Eagles. You conceded just 1.5 goals. So the back half, including yourself, taking those intercept marks, pretty much part and parcel of the business nowadays.
Yeah, the back six and seven, you know, all year have been pretty strong. So, you know, we pride ourselves pretty well down there and, you know, keeping opposition to as minimal as possible. But, yeah, we've gelled pretty well over the year and, you know, we've even had Mitch Bain come in for his first go down back on the weekend and played some really good footy as well. So, you know, the guys that are coming through the back line are actually playing some really good footy.
Only came in there 33 times. You would have been getting cold, Tone. Was there any other boys down there inkling to get up the field and maybe nail a couple of goals because they were fairly well spread?
Yeah, nah, she was fresh. That yeah, these bones don't handle the cold too well. So, no, it was actually nice. I actually got to go to the bench for a while on the weekend as well. We're up by a bit. So it was actually good to, you know, rest the legs a bit too.
Now, Tony, it's a milestone coming up for you this weekend against East Fremantle. We know Bill Walker, 305 games at Swan Districts, is the game's record holder, but we've worked out and it's come to our attention that you're playing game number 279, so going past Stan Nowotny, a two-time premiership player at Swan Districts, a great during the John Todd era, but you get to 279 this weekend. Number two on the list, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, obviously I'm very proud. Just to be able to play for Swans, being such a great club, you know, when I first started, I never thought I'd probably get to this stage. But, you know, being on the list now with those players, it's a great honour. You know, Stan, obviously, being a great player of the footy club and, you know, the list of those guys in that top tier, you know, very honoured.
And to play for as long as you have, mate, and obviously getting picked up by West Coast back in 2008 and then to Swan Districts, your career starts, and to go for as long as you have, mate, how have you stood up, say, physically with your body? How's that been?
Oh, look, there's been some challenges. Yeah, the body, you know, being a bit leaner and skinnier, it has taken its battles and its blows. But, you know, I've been able to manage, you know, through some of those difficult ones. You know, I probably had a couple of real bad ones in a couple of years there, but they were in the last game of the year. So I had the off-season to recover and get through, which helped me. But, yeah, I think being a bit leaner and a bit more flexible has probably taken a bit more of the pressure off the body where, you know, some of the bigger bodies out there may struggle a bit.
And did it take a little while, mate? Because, you know, when you started your footy career at senior level, you were, you know, a pretty skinny young man, and it took you a while probably to grow into that body. But, you know, fairest and best at your club in 2013, 15, 18. In more recent times, you've been, you know, one of the most consistent players at your club.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it was probably until I reckon I played maybe 100 waffle games that I started to probably feel like I was a consistent player. You know, being a young kid, I was skinny and, you know, I was probably a bit underdone with fitness, and that was probably the whole concentration at that time as a kid. But I realised that, you know, I had a lot more to offer with my strengths, and I really just kind of focused in on those things, you know, once I'd got to that 100-game mark and had that confidence and belief in myself. So I think that held me in good stead just to stick to my strengths and what made me a good player. So I just concentrated on those things, and, yeah, it's been good to be able to put all these games together now.
Chatting with Swan District's veteran Tony Knott on Sports Day. Game number 279, as I touched on, second on the game's record tally. Is there the possibility, it's in your line of sight now, 305, it might take a season and a bit, but is it something that is in the back of your mind?
Yeah, it definitely is. I think it gets mentioned a fair bit. There's probably a bit more pressure from other people, I suppose, to push me to keep going as well, but you know, I've really just got to get through this year. Obviously, you know, living away from Perth now, and you know, the commitment is getting a little bit harder towards the end of the year. So my main focus now is just really just to get through this last part of the year, and then I'll reassess. And you know, if it all works out well this year, then yeah, I would like to, you know, maybe have a crack again next year. So see how that ends up.
Tony, you mentioned not living all that close to the Oval. You're in Busselton, so it's a case where you have to travel week in, week out. What's your training regime?
So I'm training with the Busselton Football Club, so I'm just there a couple of times a week training with them, which is good. You know, the comp down here is actually pretty good as well, so you know, they've been kind enough to let me train with them during the week, and then I'll just make the commute up on a Friday night and get to stay with the folks and, you know, still get to see my family and stuff, so it's good.
What have you done away from the footy field in your time, mate? Have you stuck to the same thing, or have you been in and out of different jobs? What have you done on the side?
So I'm just, one of the reasons I've moved down here now is I started working at Mandoon Estate, obviously out in the Swan Valley, which is a winery, and they've actually got winery down south now, so I've actually worked down there in Hamlet Bay, so doing a bit of study in viticulture and horticulture, so really enjoying it.
Beautiful. So we're going to see the Knott wines in the not too distant future, are we? That sounds like it'll be quite good.
Oh yeah, don't mind drinking a few. I don't know about making it.
And we talked about records and milestones and you playing on, but the ultimate, of course, is a flag. And you're a bit off the pace at the moment in the season this season, but that's the ultimate, obviously, to hopefully finish off with a premiership and sail off into the sunset.
Oh yeah, I suppose that's the fairy tale. Obviously, we know we've got a fair bit of work to do, and it's going to be pretty tight. But yeah, it is. I think our group at the moment, you know, it is pretty good. And you know, if we get our full squad together, we can challenge you know, these top teams as well. So you know, the chance is definitely there for us. And you know, that's what's kept me going as well, is that last little chance to finish off on a high.
Well, let's face it. If you can't beat East Fremantle, West Perth and Peel in the last three qualifying games, mate, they're the same teams that are making up the top part of the table right now. So you don't deserve to be there, do you? So the next 3 weeks are the big challenge.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are. You know, you play the top teams, you got to beat them, and you deserve to be there. So that's a challenge for us.
Take care, mate. Nice to chat. Take care.
Thanks you. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us.
Good on you, Tony Knott. A magnificent milestone. The great Stazzera, he's going to jump over the top of him.
Yes, Stan Nowotny, number 14, used to be a centre-half forward. Played a small centre-half forward in any term, any era, I suppose. But yes, and Billy Walker, four-time Sandover medalist, sits at number one.
Yeah, he's a legend, Billy. I see him down there at the Odin Tavern, which his young bloke Greg runs. But Billy's always in there just walking around saying g'day to the customers. Fantastic to see him still so fit and well. Other results out of the weekend. Perth thumped by Claremont. Absolute pulverisation there, as we did see, of course, in the game that we just spoke about with Noddy there, the West Coast Eagles. Only one goal. Things are looking pretty grim there. Subiaco defeating East Perth, no surprise, and Peel Thunder getting the job done over South Fremantle.
Yeah, that was the match of the round, really, wasn't it, with Peel Thunder getting home in a Tight match by 14 points. Jai Amos saw him kick a couple of beautiful goals, one from long range. Travis Collier with two as well. So Peel Thunder, at the moment, have the edge over Swan Districts on the ladder. They're in fifth position, 36 points and a percentage of 124 compared to Swan's 118.
And what it does do is it puts South Fremantle in that fight with Peel Thunder and Swan Districts for that final spot in the top five. So looking forward to seeing the way that that pans out. That's our WAFL update. Australia's Most Wanted, the Kia EV6 and Kia Sportage Cars of the Year. We'll clear a commitment, come back, and the man who has all of the news up to date is Daniel Garb of The World Game. He will join us next here on Sports Day.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, Cars of the Year, and Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Thanks to Repco Authorised Service for expert car service. To book online, you go to repcoservice.com. They bring us Sports Day. And our next guest is Daniel Garb, sports broadcaster, ABC's AFL commentator. He's part of the Nest podcast, and he's doing many other things on the side. He's always got fingers in many pies, our Daniel Garb. But one thing that I love about him is he's always across the world game. Arsenal, too good for Leicester City. Man City, too good for Bournemouth. But Brentford, 4-0 winners over my old mob, Manchester United. They couldn't even get on the score sheet, and Chelsea and Tottenham played out a draw. But firstly, Garby, as we welcome you in, Manchester United, they're on a road to nowhere right now.
Yeah, it's a big story in world sport, isn't it? Because they're a huge sporting organisation who are in absolute turmoil. And just when you think they've hit rock bottom, well, they find a way to change that narrative yet again and plunge to new lows. And Eric Ten Hag, the new manager, is the first coach in the history of Manchester United to lose his first two games of a season. And they're bottom of the table right now. So losses to Brighton at home and then Brentford away. They're 4-0 down at half time to Brentford. Manchester United, they started the preseason so well. They looked as if they had a new system, and it's all fallen apart two games in. So the pressure mounts on the new manager, the pressure mounts on big-name players, and they are a club in complete and utter disarray at the moment. And as it stands, you can't see them making the top six, really. And just where they go from here, it's hard to really see a way out for them at this point in time. They're trying to sign players desperately before the window closes. It's all panicky stuff, really. And this is just a far cry from a club who set the tone and set the benchmark in world football, not just English football, for close to 20 years through the 90s and 2000s.
Yes, not since Sir Alec Ferguson have they really enjoyed success. And the Glazer family, how much heat on them, having been the owners and what's going on at the moment? What sort of pressure is building on that part of the club?
Enormous pressure, but they don't front the media at all. They manage to avoid any sort of scrutiny in front of the cameras because they stay away from all of that. They were at the game, I think, in the first weekend of the season, but they very rarely spend time around Manchester. Look, they have plunged lots of money into the club in terms of transfers, not their own money, but Manchester United over the last decade under the Glazers' reign has spent more money on transfers than any other club in world football. How they've operated as a business, though, is certainly and worthy of criticism. And the big problem is they've presided over a toxic culture that has clearly emanated there at Manchester United, and they haven't fixed it. In fact, it's become worse. You know, the first two, 3 years after Sir Alex Ferguson, everyone forgave Manchester United for falling away because Fergie ran every single part of that football club. It was natural that they would struggle to find their feet after that. It's been more than 10 years since he's departed, or close to 10 years, sorry. And they're even worse in terms of the way they operate. So the Glazers need to take massive responsibility and enormous criticism for that. And you can understand why their fans want them out. And they're talking about boycotting the game against Liverpool next week to make a statement.
The good, the bad and the ugly I'm going to throw to you now, Garby. Nottingham Forest back in the top flight, first time for about 23 years. Terrific scenes at their home ground and a win, 1-0 at that. But then, of course, the London Derby and the managers. What happened at full-time there?
That was fantastic theatre, wasn't it, between Antonio Conte and Thomas Tuchel. Dramatic game. Chelsea, Tottenham, both sides you would think can mount a bit of a title challenge this season. How long that lasts for is up for question, but a two-all draw shows that they are very evenly balanced, these two sides, in terms of their early expectations this season. But the pressure ramped up and the managers got heated, that's for sure. They both copped a yellow card early on as they disputed a tackle on Kai Havertz from Chelsea. And then after the game, Antonio Conte held on a little bit too long in the handshake, Mark Latham, John Howard style, if you like. And it all boiled over after that, and both managers were given a red card and will be banned from the dugout for their next game. I reckon it's the worst confrontation we've seen in a managerial sense in the Premier League ever. I remember Mourinho and Wenger, I was at that game at Stamford Bridge in 2014, getting in a bit of a tasty duel. But this was a level above, for sure. It got pretty physical. So it's what we love about the Premier League. But both managers have been sanctioned, and that's probably the right decision.
All right. Now let's turn our attention to Ronaldo. Inter Milan and AC Milan turned down the chance to sign him, we believe.
Yeah, big clubs don't want him because he comes with a lot of baggage. Financial baggage, of course, a huge salary. And that's another issue plaguing Manchester United right now. And because he's 37, yes, he scores a lot of goals, but he doesn't really offer you much in a defensive sense, pressing from the front. So I think big clubs would take him if Ronaldo would be willing to buy in as a squad player and be happy to be rotated and come on off the bench, if you like. But he's not. He wants to be the main man. He still thinks he's the best player in the world. And he's still an exceptional player, of course, and he's arguably the best player of all time. But he's not the best player in the world anymore, and big clubs know that. Ronaldo maybe not admitting it to himself at this stage and doesn't want to be at Manchester United. Manchester United don't really know what to do with him. So it's a messy situation for him and for the club at the moment.
Tonight, or 3 a.m. our time, at least Liverpool Crystal Palace, as we get a look at Liverpool, one of the contenders this season.
Yeah, big opportunity for them after they drew 2-2 with Fulham on the opening weekend. Liverpool to kickstart their title charge, and they would be expected to beat Palace, maybe not beat them easily, but to dominate that football game and certainly claim all 3 points. A good chance for Darwin Nunez, the new signing, to get on the score sheet again, and keen to see Mohamed Salah, who has looked dangerous all through the pre-season, if he can reproduce his best stuff as well. They've got some injury concerns, Liverpool in midfield, a little bit light on there, but they should be too strong for Crystal Palace at home, and all eyes will be on them to see if they can get up to the speed of Manchester City, who look fantastic in the early stages of the season, along with Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus has been a fantastic signing, and they've won both their games as well. A perfect start for the Gunners.
And Garby, we know Ange Postecoglou is doing some great work at Celtic, and there is talk, and there has been talk, that he could one day find himself in a managerial role in the Premier League. Is that fanciful or could be reality?
Oh, I think it's reality for sure. I think if he has another big year or two at Celtic, I think the Premier League will definitely come calling. Celtic fans are resigned to losing Ange Postecoglou at some stage. And the track record tells you that managers who do well at Celtic and Rangers get called upon by Premier League clubs. You only have to look at Steven Gerrard, who did well at Rangers and is now managing Aston Villa. There's been some people saying, hey, Manchester United might come calling for Ange Postecoglou. He might say no, though, considering the way that Manchester United are performing at the minute and the dramas at that football club. But yeah, I think another big season at Celtic. Hopefully he wins the title, has a good Champions League campaign, and then he can have a pick at a club in the mid part of the EPL ladder and hopefully launch his career in England off the back of that and maybe take on one of the big clubs one day. Make no mistake, Ange Postecoglou thinks he can manage one of the biggest clubs in the world. He thinks that deep down. He might not say it, but I reckon he thinks that deep down, and this is a progression to hopefully doing that one day.
Well, he's getting runs on the board, Garby, and that's all you have to do. Thank you very, very much for your time tonight. We appreciate it, mate. Take care.
Thanks, boys. All the best.
Good on you. Daniel Garb there. He is a legend and part of the Nest podcast, of course. Now, Manchester United, unbelievable. John Chapman in 1921 was the last time that they've actually lost the first two Premier League matches in a season. It's incredible.
It is. And as I say, if you've been to Old Trafford, the history there, the pressure that is, and the expectations on the club is something that you'll very rarely experience. And what's happening at the moment after that loss to Brentford, I wouldn't be surprised if the fans get extremely restless in a hurry if they don't get some results soon.
We are going to have a chat to a Western Force signing, the new guy, Hamish Stewart. He'll join us next here on Sports Day.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, Cars of the Year. And Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Nice to have your company. It was fantastic last week to read the news that Hamish Stewart was heading to the Western Force here in WA. And tonight we find him back on the farm in Toowoomba strutting his stuff. Hamish, welcome to Sports Day. Nice to chat, mate.
Thanks for having me on.
Just tell us about the connection to the Western Force and how this scenario unfolded.
Yeah, no, it was a bit of a tricky one, actually. It's obviously... I was talking to the Reds, and then that sort of fell through. And then Cronny gave me a call and said, would you be interested to come to WA and, you know, join in the Sea of Blue? And I said, yeah. And then within 2 days, I had the contract signed and was officially a Western Force player.
There was a lot of talk that you were heading to the Melbourne Rebels.
Yeah, it was that Rebels was on the cards there for a while. That obviously caused a bit of chaos around Rugby Australia, but you know, happy to be in Western Australia.
Now, you haven't got here yet, as Carl mentioned. October's when you land on the West Coast. But in terms of getting yourself physically ready for the campaign, talk us through how you go about it on the other side of the country.
Yeah, obviously being back home, Dad's got me working around the clock, keeping me nice and busy. But I just miss being playing club footy in Brizzy for Brothers. I get to train a couple of times a week and then obviously play on the weekend. So hopefully we're shooting it into the final soon.
So, Hamish, just to expand, you said your dad's got you working. What sort of role has he got you on the farm there doing?
Oh, no, it's just clocked into the season. So we've got foals dropping left, right and centre. And we start covering mares start of next month. So... it'll all start to ramp up a little bit more in next month, but obviously the foals dropping everywhere. It keeps you up around the clock following them there.
Hamish, how much of an eye do you keep on the international scene? Because obviously we've just been absolutely pounded by Argentina, our worst loss in our history when it comes to your sport. And, you know, when we look at, say, the competition and the Western Force have been one of those teams that have been trying to work so hard to attract talented players like yourself so that they can rise. And it's great that we're now back in the competition from a Western Australian perspective, because you're not a national sport until you've got representation in each of the states. So it's fantastic to have you coming here. What do you think we need to do as a competition to actually get Australian rugby back on the map, so to speak?
It's actually a very good question. I was actually thinking about it today. You know, obviously we've got the potential and all the players, as you saw in the first game against Argentina. I think it's just having the players turn up on the day to do the job. You know, you can have all the artillery you want, but you got to have the right gun to fire it. So, I think just that people have got to turn up. You can obviously got the right players in the right positions. So, and obviously they're good enough to play on the international stage, but they just have to show up. And once they show up, they can put a really good performance together.
Hamish, I hate to say this, but when you said that was a very good question from Carl, he fist pumped the air, and I thought that made me feel really bad because I've got to come up with something to match that. It won't be easy, and I'm not going to try, but Simon Cron, why will he be good for you and good for the Force?
Cronny, he's an unbelievable coach. I was fortunate to have him in the 20s for Oz. We narrowly lost to get into the grand final, but he brings a sense of calmness and direction, which is what you want for a coach. And I think he'll make a really big impact to everyone that he's involved with at the Force in management and also the players. So I'm looking forward to reconnecting with him, and I'm sure all the other boys are too.
And when it comes to Simon Cron, he's been quoted in the paper over here as sounding at least pretty ruthless when it comes to results. He doesn't want to just come here and bide his time and just have an average side. He wants to have an elite team to get up the ladder and play at the business end of the season, which I'm sure those are words you'd like to hear as well.
Yeah. When I got the call from Cronny, he said, look, no, I've I've gone around and recruited the players that I want to get to the finals and win that Super Rugby title, which is what, you know, every coach and every player strives for. But he was, and I still remember from his Aussie 20 days, he's ruthless, and he won't stop until he gets what he wants. So I think that for a mentality of a coach is, which is what you want as a player to drive you to get any success that you need to get there, and he seems to be in the ship to get us there.
We are chatting to Hamish Stewart, if you've just joined us here on Sports Day, one of our new Western Force signings from last week. Today, another Queenslander has put pen to paper, only a 1-year deal, but Bryce Hegarty, currently playing for the Leicester Tigers over there in English rugby. What do you know about him? Because, mate, I think he's one that probably is going to be vying for a spot like you at that fly half position. He has obviously play as a fullback as well and a utility back predominantly, but there's going to be competition for spots.
Yeah, no, old Hegsy, he's a good fella. You know, obviously, striving for the same position, and he's got the he's versatile. So you know, obviously having competition in each spot makes you push harder each week to try and to sit in that number one position. But I think he's a great bloke, and he's a very talented player, and he's been like that for the last 10 years. So it's obviously a good sign to get for the Western Force.
Yeah, he's 29 years of age. With yourself at 24, and you've represented us at underage level, I think under 20s, which you've mentioned working with Simon Cron. Going forward, mate, do you still have aspirations to, you know, play for Australia, and do you think that you've got that individually in you?
Yeah, I think once your team starts going forward, and if you're the driver of the team, you're going to get noticed. So obviously my first preference is to get into there and just get my position and make it solid, and then get the boys through to the finals, which is what I think everyone will. And then if you're doing the right things, you'll get looked at. So obviously my first thing is to win games for Perth, and and everything should follow after that.
Good on you, mate. Thank you very much for yakking to us, and we will have a chat to you down the track once you arrive, mate, in October. Thanks for your time.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Good on you. Hamish Stewart there, Western Force signing, and, of course, further news coming out of the Western Force around players under Simon Cron. Are they always, and well, from what we've had a chat to anyway, with all the new players that are coming and everyone around the Western Force, they seem very, very excited to be working with Simon Cron. He's obviously coming with a really big reputation.
Yes, well, let's hope that reputation is backed up with results, because the Force, if we're being honest, I mean, they've had some decent performances scattered over the last few seasons. But really, there's a latent group of rugby supporters that would love to get to games and see success more regularly.
Well, we had a beautiful day yesterday. So after we clear a commitment here, thanks to Kia Australia's Most Wanted, the Kia EV6 and Kia Sportage Cars of the Year, we're going to have a chat to Ben Carrick, who is an Avon Descent winner. All of the festivities unfolded down there at Lilac Hill yesterday, 10 a.m. to 3 o'clock, as they all crossed the finish line. It was a lot of fun and family action. We'll have a chat to Ben next here on Sports Day.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, Cars of the Year, and Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Nice to have your company. And for those of you that got a chance to get out along our beautiful Avon River, 124 kilometres of it were involved when it comes to our Avon descent. And Ben Carrick is the king. He is the winner after the 124-kilometre ultra marathon single kayak on Sunday. Ben, welcome to Sports Day. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me on.
How challenging was the race for you? And where was, I suppose, the most challenging parts this year?
Always really challenging. The high water means it's going to be a little bit quicker than normal, but it means probably the valleys, the first 40 k's of day two, with a lot of turbulent moving water. It's a lot of boat maintenance, getting it down in one piece. That was probably the most challenging, but also the most enjoyable part of the race.
So when we look at the weather last week, and there was plenty of rain, as you know, was that to your advantage, or did it make life more difficult as you headed down the Avon?
I think everyone has a different view of what they like. Anything over a metre of water, we're at about 1.3 metres on the weekend, is considered high. Last year it was about 2 metres, so we've been blessed, I think, in the last few years with some really great levels. I probably perfect level for me. I probably wasn't too high that it was completely unrecognisable, the river, but high enough to make it, you know, a real sort of thrill running it down the valley.
Got to ask you the question, after 124 kilometres, can you lift your arms up the next day, or is it just a little bit of good soreness?
I would say good soreness. I'm surprising myself. If anything, my head's probably a little bit foggy from sort of the weekend come down afterwards. A few little blisters on the fingers, but apart from that, I actually feel pretty good, which is surprising.
Strategically, mate, how do you prepare yourself for this race, and how much work do you put in behind the scenes to get to the day?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. For me, it's been, I think, 11 descents now that I've done. I've progressed up from, I'm surf lifesaver and sort of ocean paddler who's moved into the Avon sort of plastic skis into the K1 kayak class. And it's, this is actually the first kayak class that I finished. I had one previous crash out, and I wrapped my boat around a tree. And this year I spent a lot of time studying the river itself and getting up there, doing a lot of runs through the trees and through the valley, and just learning the rapids and knowing my lines. And I planned out my training for the last sort of 4 months. But yeah, it's been sort of a combination of years of paddling and really put my head towards it this year. And it was a good opportunity because some of the top paddlers, two of them were heading to Worlds, so they opted out of doing the singles and did a team together. So they sort of, you know, left an opportunity there. It'd be great to race against them 1 year. But yeah, sort of had a great run and yeah, took the opportunity.
So Emu Falls, when you talk about this white water and that that you have to learn the intricacies of the Championship Rapids and of course Bell's Rapid, which is very highly renowned. Now, I obviously didn't get out there on the weekend because I was doing the footy and stuff, but the water itself, mate, was it looked like, and when I had a chat to the starter, John King, or as the race director as he is known, looked like it was going to be a pretty cool morning. Was it cold out there during the race?
It's cold. I think, you know,
it was 2 degrees, I reckon, on Saturday.
You come to learn to expect it. The fingers go numb. If you go for a swim, it really does change your race because your whole body gets cold. Because you can generally, especially in the kayaks, you can stay dry with the spray deck on top. Which is your advantage, but if you do go for a swim, then you're at the mercy of the river a bit because you've got to have to find a bank to empty out. So that's sort of one of the, I guess, the pros and cons. But yeah, the water was, the rapids were fantastic.
Bit of bravery required, though. I mean, Emu Falls, Championship Rapids and Bell's Rapids, as Carl said, not always able to cruise through and just come out the other side unscathed.
Nah, not at all. I think everyone who comes up to those rapids is sort of, you know, heart in the mouth, and, you know, those who, and I've done it in the past, you come up and you're actually not sure what you're going down. It's even more of an experience. It's funny, at that sort of level we had, these big name rapids, maybe Bells aside, are actually quite runnable. Some of the really difficult bits head a little bit underwater. You get big standing waves. But some of the smaller, not as well-known rapids pose the biggest issues. And, you know, I was talking to a lot of paddlers from the weekend, and they were saying to me that they got through all the big ones okay and had swims in places that they didn't even know where they were.
The 72-kilometre stretch, though, from west to Jay, that would have to be the most difficult. Would you advocate that?
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, it is. The flat, the sort of getting through the trees and the valley is the most difficult part, but I think it's the reason why anyone does the race. It's to actually, you know, it's not just about flat water paddling. It's about navigating skills, white water, and then I guess the endurance for the last 30K on the flats on top of that. But most, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of paddlers out there that would like to see the race maybe finish about 15K shorter.
8 hours, 16:25. I'm sure it's all a little of a blur to you now. It goes without saying, you'll be back to defend your title, I'm guessing. You can't just leave it there for others to take.
I've got a second bub on the way during November, and part of the reason getting all the training done was the agreement with my wife that I would back off a little bit. So, look, I'll probably have to get it
signed off at home, but I think I have to turn up and defend it. We've got the downwind surf ski racing season moving into now with the Doctor race back from Roto in the end of November. So that's where sort of, I guess, the goals start to realign for the next couple of months at the moment.
Always that negotiation at home, Skeet, and we know what that's like, don't we?
Yeah, but Ben's trying to go out and negotiate to go and fulfil some physical activity. You and I are just slightly different, whether it's different pursuits, hobbies. But no, Ben, just off the record, on the record, how many times have you competed in the Avon now?
Well, look, I think I'd have to double check. I think it's 11 finishes and 12 starts, or it's 10 starts and or 11 starts and 10 finishes. I have to go back and check the records. But yeah, I think it's 11.
Well, and through that time, mate, how much has the technology changed in the last decade?
In terms of craft?
Yeah, everything.
Yeah. For me, looking back at the photos when I probably first started, I think the skis have come a long way. I think the sort of construction and the materials they use hasn't changed an awful lot. I think, you know, what we paddle down is the Kevlar boats. They got a lot of flex before they'll give. And I think, you know, paddle technology and how they make them. I think with a lot of the flat water boats, we've seen big changes. Yeah, but definitely even like the equipment we wear, like the life jackets, the helmets, the thermals that we wear now, you know, everything is really, you know, it's marketed well, it's well fitting. They definitely charge you for it. There's no doubt about that. But no, it definitely has changed.
Good stuff, mate. Well, thank you very much for having a yak to us and congratulations again for taking it out on the weekend.
Yeah, beauty. Thanks for having me on, boys.
Good on you. Ben Carrick there, Avon Descent winner in the kayak on Sunday. 124Ks negotiated in 8 hours, 16.25. Gear up for winter with the biggest range of top brand outdoor power gear at the Toolkit Depot. We'll come back with Kia's top seven next here on Sports Day.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year, and Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Skeet, let's get into our Kia top seven, the Kia EV6 and Kia Sportage, the cars of the year.
Let's jump straight into number seven, Darcy Fogarty from the Adelaide Crows. 4 goals, 1. 11 disposals, 7 marks. He's got those tree trunk thighs, which can project the ball a long, long way. He comes in at number seven. Of course, the Crows knocking over the North Melbourne Footy Club. Cam Rayner, 18 disposals, 4 goals. Outstanding, particularly late in the game against St Kilda on Friday night footy. And a win to the Brisbane Lions means their top four aspirations very much still intact. At number five, Callum Mills, Sydney Swan star, 29 disposals, 9 marks. Fantastic performance from him as they knocked over the Magpies at the SCG yesterday and find themselves in second position on the table. Jake Melksham, here's an interesting story. He's at number four, of course, at the middle of that mid-season dust-up with he and Stephen May. Well, he was important against Carlton at the weekend, kicking a late goal to finish with 4-2, 15 disposals next to his name. He missed out, of course, on some of the enjoyment of grand final festivities last year. So will he get the chance to be front and centre in 2022? Zach Butters from the Port Adelaide Footy Club, 3 goals, 25 disposals as they completely demolished the Essendon Football Club at 3. I've got Tom Lynch at number 2, 8 goals, matching what he did against the West Coast Eagles earlier in the season at Optus Stadium. And despite the fact I was going to put Sean Darcy with his Glendenning Allan Medal effort at number 1, our producer has just convinced me to go to David Mundy. His last derby, 25 disposals, outstanding performance. He is our number 1 Kia top 7, thanks to Australia's Most Wanted, the Kia EV6 and Kia Sportage Cars of the Year.
Now, on this day, Skeet, thanks to Barrett O'Day, because the little things are everything.
Yes, we go back to 2000. Australia's first game of cricket under a closed roof was played at Docklands in Melbourne against South Africa. In 2009, on this day, Usain Bolt broke the 100-metre world record with a time of 9.58 seconds in the final of the World Athletics Championships. And in 2015, on this day, Jason Day became the 5th Australian to win the US PGA World title. On this day, thanks to Barra and O'Day, don't miss out on the little moments because The little things are everything.
Now, Todd Johnston, not too far away from jumping on your radio. He'll take you through until midnight with the night shift. So looking forward to his program. For those of you that haven't been with us, off the top of the show tonight, Essendon's president has stepped down, the board weighing up the options. The future of the coach has been assured by the CEO tonight. So the rumours that were circulating today that Ben Rutten had been sacked are not true. But will they join the race with GWS and North Melbourne in chasing the services of Alistair Clarkson?
I think that's a no-brainer. I think that's on the cards. May have been for some time that they were just waiting for opportunity. And look, time is running out. North Melbourne close, they say, to getting Clarko across the line. The Giants in the background. But yes, Essendon loom is a big danger. Bad news coming out of the Geelong Footy Club late today with Jeremy Cameron having been sidelined with a hamstring strain against the Gold Coast Suns at the weekend. Of course, he was right in the mix to be Coleman medalist for this year, but he's going to have a spell for round 23 against the Eagles. And then, of course, the week's break should be hopefully right for the first qualifying final.
Well, mate, they need him. He's been absolutely awesome for them. You know, the work that he's been doing up and down the ground and the volume of goals that he's been able to kick. But, you know, they've still got Hawkins and they've still got a few of those little fellas like Close and Stengel buzzing around in there. And Maxie Holmes has come back in pretty good form in the last couple of weeks as well. Brad Crouch is the only player that's going to be missing from AFL action this week. That's assuming he doesn't challenge the high bump on Darcy Gardner of Brisbane. So he's been offered 1 week for that. And Cricket Australia, they've released their 5-year strategic plan designed to enhance the game's long-term financial sustainability, significantly increase the participation, particularly between 5 and 7-year-olds, and ensure that cricket remains a large part of Australian life. So that sounds pretty good to me. We need to get to the news. That is coming up next. And as I said just a short time ago, on your radio next will be Todd Johnston with the night shift.